The 100 Years' War, the De Guesclin period, the Black Prince versus Armagnac, Part 2. Well, 6 weeks passed as the pressure on Armagnac increased. Reports arrived of the prince's plans to enforce payment of the fouage. He was said to be recruiting men-at-arms to march against recalcitrant noblemen. There was a persistent rumor that he had offered the Count of Armagnac's land to Olivier de Clisson. In Paris, Armagnac pressed the French king for an answer. On June 30, 1368, as the great company was marching through the Gâtinais toward Paris and the men-at-arms were gathering across the Île-de-France to defend the capital, an important meeting of the royal council was held to reassure the king's conscience. As Charles later put it, it was attended by all the principal civil and military officers of the realm and many of the leading members of the royal family and nobility. They resolved that the king should receive the appeals. Immediately after the council meeting, the king entered into a secret agreement with Armagnac, his son John, Arnaud Armagnac, and Baron d'Albert, and Archibald, Count of Perigord. This document went so far beyond the role of disinterested justicar, which Charles V proposed to project in public. He promised to receive the appeal of Armagnac and his son, and any similar appeals which might be lodged by others. He promised that he would not make the renunciations of sovereignty required by the Treaty of Calais without consent of the appellants, and they were for their part agreed not to abandon their appeals or settle with Edward III and the prince without consulting the King of France. Turning to the war which they all knew would follow, the appellants agreed to fight for the King of France and the provinces bordering on Aquitaine. Within the duchy, the king bound himself to defend them by force of arms if the prince attacked them or their domains. Quote, because they have appealed, they are in the king's obedience. End of quote. As Charles later informed the King of England. When the agreement had been sealed, Charles V granted the Count of Armagnac an enormous pension of 100,000 gold francs per year. He also made him generous grants of land in the southwest, most of which would have been conquered from the Prince of Wales and his subjects. Now, the decision to receive the Gascon appeals was followed by an intense round of diplomatic activity as Charles V set about securing his frontiers in preparation for war. Within a few days of the Faithful Council, meeting of June the 30th, Charles's ambassadors left for Castile with offers of money and men to enable Henry of Trastamara to complete the destruction of Pedro I. On November the 21st, 1368, a formal treaty of alliance was sealed in the pretender's camp at Toledo, where he was still engaged in the prolonged siege of Pedro's principal garrison in central Castile. The treaty provided for the creation of a joint Atlantic war fleet comprising 10 French sailing ships and 20 Castilian galleys, which were to operate against English possessions in the southwestern France in the year of 1369. In return, Charles proposed to send Bertrand de Guesclin back to Castile with a small army of men-at-arms to complete the work of 1366. Bertrand, who had already begun to recruit men in Languedoc, arrived with some 600 cavalry early in February of 1369. He was present at the Battle of Montiel on March 14, 1369, when Don Pedro's army was defeated and scattered as it tried to relieve Toledo. And again, a few days later, at the famous encounter in his tents, and Henry of Trastamara wrestled with Don Pedro on the ground and killed him with his own hands. Behind the personal tragedy lay a grave political reverse for Edward III and, of course, the Black Prince, who now found a permanently hostile power installed on the southern flank of Aquitaine and the largest war fleet of the Atlantic seaboard committed to the service of their enemies. Only a few weeks before Pedro's death, Edward's ministers in Westminster had declined to intervene in Castilian King's dispute with the Prince of Wales and washed their hands of their sometimes ally. Edward III was destined to suffer a worse humiliation in Flanders, a territory much more important to him, in which he had once held most of the cards. In spite of the nominal allegiance of the Count Louis Mall to the House of Valois, Edward III had retained the support of the towns and much of the nobility of Flanders for a generation. In October of 1364, perhaps the high point of Edward III's prestige on the European continent, Louis de Mall had agreed in a course of a long conference with the king in Dover Castle to marry Margaret, his only child, to Edward V's son, Langley, Earl of Cambridge. Margaret was the most valuable bride of Western Europe, the heiress not only of her father's territories in Flanders, but also of Artois and the imperial county of Burgundy, which belonged to her grandmother. The marriage would have made Edward the greatest prince in Northern Europe and created a ring of English-controlled territories around France's northern and eastern borders. But that was not going to happen. The couple were, like almost all princely personages, related within the prohibited degrees of affinity. A papal dispensation was therefore required. This would normally have been a formality, but in spite of intense lobbying by successive English agents, Urban V refused, professing to find in the match a danger to their souls, a pernicious example to others, and a scandal to many. He eventually annulled the couple's betrothal and declared them to be at liberty to find spouses elsewhere. One of the Pope's earliest biographers wrote of this decision that the Pope could perfectly, properly refuse Edward III with what he had granted to others with no better spiritual justification, because the power to give dispensations for marriage was a matter of grace and not of justice. Then, perhaps sensing that a better reason was required, he added that if the English dynasty, already so powerful, had succeeded in this, they would have surrounded most of the French kingdom. Either France would have been absorbed by them, or else there would have been an unending set of tribulations, turbulence, war, and dissension. Once again, it seemed natural, as it had been before Edward III's victory, to regard France as the cornerstone of Western Europe, whose interests could be identified with those of Christendom. Edward III nursed his disappointment and went on to the next best thing, which was a political alliance with Louis de Mal. But the treaty, which was concluded in May of 1367, conferred little value to the English king, apart from Louis' undertaking, for what it was worth, not to allow the county to be used as a base for military operations against England. It was not in the event worth very much. The alliance of the count and the hand of his daughter were eventually to go to Charles V's brother, Philip, Duke of Burgundy. This marriage, first broached with a reluctant count in 1364, was pressed with growing vigor once Charles V had sealed his pact with the Count of Armagnac. After prolonged and difficult negotiations, agreement was finally reached on April 12, 1369. Margaret was even more closely related to Philip than she was to Edmund Langley, but the necessary papal dispensation was granted at once. It was the beginning of a long eclipse of English influence in Flanders, which had been the main source in the region for more than a century and a half, and had three times opened France's northern frontier to English armies. It was also a good indication of what intelligent observers, with their own interests to protect, perceived that things were going. So, Black Prince is not going to be happy when he hears the latest news. Now, the sources for this: The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylands, and The Hundred Years' War Volume 2, Trial by Fire by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.